Hi, I'm Ken Hanley from Edinburgh in Scotland. Camera ha, procure the meal the field. And translated, that means a very warm welcome. It's a very warm Scottish heartfelt. Have the best possible day you can have. And the coup de meal the field is our Celtic wash with our Irish cousins, wishing you 100,000 welcomes and the warmest possible day. Camera ha, a coup de meal a field.
Paula Green has dedicated her life to seeking peace in some of the world's most conflicted areas. She founded the nonprofit Karuna Center for Peacebuilding in Amherst, Massachusetts. And Paula teaches graduate-level conflict transformation at the School for International Training in Vermont. Her work has taken her to trouble spots in Palestine, the Sudan, Rwanda, Sri Lanka, Nepal, and Bosnia. She joins us on Travel with Rick Steves to share how people in such troubled places as these are able to rebuild their lives and their communities after surviving years of bloody conflict. Paula, so glad you could be with us today on Travel with Rick Steves.
Thank you for inviting me.
Now, Paula, you've founded the Karuna Center for Peacebuilding. What is the Karuna Center?
Well, the word Karuna comes from the Sanskrit, which is the ancient language of India, and it means compassion. And I chose that word because when I founded the organization in 1994, my work was primarily focused in Asia, and I also have a Buddhist practice. As it turned out, the work became very international, but I kept the name because the basis of my work is compassion for the suffering that people are experiencing due to armed conflict. Karuna Center works in war-torn and war-recovering countries with local partners. We work by invitation from people who find us either on the web or through my teaching and invite us to partner with them to help rebuild community relations that have been shattered by mass violence.
Now, you've got an ironclad rule that you only go where you're invited, and you mentioned you work with local partners by invitation. Why is it important to work with local partners, and how important is it that you are enthusiastically welcomed by these people?
It seems very critical to us. It seems inappropriate for me as an American to propose a program for someone else's country that I have not been invited to propose. It's their conflict. It's their recovery. These are their decisions to make. And when the time is ripe for them, they will reach out for external help if they need it and want it. And if they don't, we have to honor that as well.
It's called peace building. It sounds nice, but I have a hard time getting my brain around exactly concretely what is peace building. Can you take an example of a troubled area and explain how you have built peace?
Well, we don't build the whole peace. We build a piece of the peace. And the work that we focus on is largely around restoring community relationships that have been destroyed by armed conflict. So, for example, in Bosnia, I had an invitation from a woman there in 1996, which was 1 year after the war ended. And in 1997, we made our first trip to Bosnia, which became a 6-year project of my going there with a team 3 times a year for a few weeks each time to work first with women's groups and then with educators to help people talk to each other about what caused the war, how it happened, what kind of suffering took place, how people could trust each other and begin to rebuild in order to live in their communities in a safe future. So that's the level of work that we do.
And just one generation ago, people were sniping at each other. Parents of the young generation today were literally killing each other. The parks in Mostar are filled with graves, and they all have the same year on it, I think, what, 1992 or something like that. And these are clearly broken relationships where you've got the parents of the young generation were killing each other, and now the young generation is trying to get it together. Is that an example of community relationships being destroyed and how you might see an opening to create something positive?
Yes, it is. And in that case, it was a woman activist, a woman named Msuta, who called me in 1996. She had heard about me from some other peace organization we were both part of. And she wanted to rebuild first the women's community, primarily the Muslim women who had been the victims of the war in the region of Bosnia in which she had lived, and then to meet with the Serb women who were on the other side of that conflict, and then to expand it to educators so that it was women and men. And we began working with the women the Muslim women first and the Muslim and Serb women and the teachers, all of whom have to live together. They are part of one community. They live next to each other, but their relationships were totally shattered by a very brutal war that went on from 1992 to 1995. And it's true, there were graveyards all over Bosnia. And in fact, people are still exhuming bodies to try to identify their loved ones.
No, you talk about working with women. Is that a common denominator if you think about troubled places around the planet, that you would have more traction in that community by working with women rather than men?
We look for common bonds. We look for bridges. And women are often a more readily accessible common bridge than men. Many of the men have been the fighters in these wars, and women come more naturally in most cultures of the world to being able to identify and express their feelings, and they seem more ready to begin to rebuild relationships after the war. This is also true of young people, and we often work with groups of young people, but we may not and should not exclude men because we need the whole community to heal.
Paula Green from the Karuna Center for Peacebuilding is our guest right now on Travel with Rick Steves, as we learn what's required on a human level to move beyond the conflicts in the world's hotspots and rebuild communities, turning enemies into neighbors. Her center's website is karunacenter.org. That's spelled K-A-R-U-N-A. Paula, you're a psychologist by training. Do you actually use those skills to psychoanalyze problems between groups of people as you would between individuals?
Well, I wouldn't use the word psychoanalyze, but I use every skill I've ever learned as a psychologist and psychotherapist in the work that I do overseas. In some way, the issues are parallel. They're issues of communication, they're issues of violence, they're issues of gaps in understanding, they're issues of misperceptions. And whether I'm working with a client or a family of clients in the United States, which I did in the past, or working overseas in war zones, the communication issues need to be addressed.
So different sides need to sit down and talk, just like a feuding couple would need to sit down and talk.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I would imagine you have face-saving concerns and pride concerns.
Yes, and people whose communities have murdered each other brutally. Mm. And how do you recover from that? How do you put all that together in order to live in the same community in the future, in order to have your children in the schools, to have your families interfacing, to have people and businesses working together?
It's hard for an American to imagine the baggage that must come with a society one generation after some kind of genocide going on. I mean, you could talk about it in former Yugoslavia, you could talk about it in Rwanda, you could talk about it in a number of places. How do you deal with these longstanding, deeply ingrained mentalities of conflict and resentment?
Well, what I often say to people is that I meet the best people in the worst of circumstances, because the people who show up with any interest in the workshops or seminars or classes that we're running are people who want to put the worst of the war behind them and rebuild new relationships. So we start with the people who are available. They're not usually the fighters themselves, although one never knows who's in the room. But we start with those people who want very much to explore what happened in order to prevent its recurrence. We're very worried about cycles of revenge and counterviolence. Mm. And the more people who can explore the causes of the conflict and seek to remediate those causes in order to prevent future revenge, that's the work we want to do.
You know, I was just in the Holy Land in Palestine and in Israel, and I kept thinking as I was talking to people, if they could stop looking to the past and consider the present and where they want to go in the future, it'd be a huge accomplishment. But these cycles of revenge just sometimes are impossible to stop.
Yes, and until the past is acknowledged, it really does haunt the human condition. People very much need to have the past acknowledged.
So it needs to be acknowledged.
That's right.
But then can you endeavor to put it behind you and deal on the present?
I think there's a process of mourning that has to happen, and it has to happen collectively in the whole community. And I think as people acknowledge the results of the conflict, mourn their losses, they can begin to build together toward a safer future.
So let's talk about the roots of these conflicts. I've been thinking about planting settlers. It seems like when one society plants settlers in another society, generations later, people pay the price. What's your take on settlers?
Well, my take on settlers is that they are they're living on somebody else's land, and it's causing a great many problems.
What are some examples of settlers that have caused problems or will cause problems?
Well, I think in our own U.S. history, we can look at the conquest of the West and the settlers. We didn't call them settlers, mm-hmm. but the people who came in and moved onto Native American land and dispossessed the Native Americans, sent them on marches, sent them away, took their land. Mm-hmm. And so we have our own very rugged history with conflict, with dispossession, and with settlement on other people's lands. And land and water are huge issues for people because for most people, they spell life. And so when lands and water are taken away, people feel existentially threatened with non-existence, and they will fight. People's basic human needs have to be satisfied.
This is Travel with Rick Steves, and together we're connecting with the rest of our world right now. We're talking with Paula Green, who has founded the Karuna Center for Peacebuilding, and she's worked in conflicted regions all across the planet. I've also been thinking about the heritage of colonialization. To me, the strife in Sri Lanka goes back to British people importing people from Tamil Nadu in India to pick the tea leaves cheaper than the local Sinhalese people. Tell me a little bit about your experience in Sri Lanka that way and the heritage of colonialism that is a very steep price to bear long after colonialism is gone.
I'm glad you asked about Sri Lanka because I started to work there in the early 1990s. And for the past 20 or 25 years, I've been going in and out of Sri Lanka a few times a year for programs. And most recently, Karuna Center did a program in the northeastern area of Sri Lanka, which is far away from the capital, in an area that has been largely Tamil, who were the minority people who were brought over and arrived there from India over the past hundreds of years. And they often feel dispossessed of their language, their customs, their culture, their religion, because they're a minority. And we were working with religious leaders from the four religions on the island. There are Christians, Muslims, Hindus, and Buddhists in Sri Lanka. And in this rural area in the northeast of the country, these religious leaders hardly knew each other, hardly went into each other's communities, had very limited ideas of what the religion stood for. And over the course of 2 years of program, we explored the ways that all the religions taught peace, all the religions sought peace for people's safety and people's well-being. And these Sri Lankans now consider themselves to be friends with each other. And they now believe that the way to go is to be connected with each other. And one of them wrote, "At first we were afraid of each other's accusations and of being blamed for the horrors of the war. Now we are friends, almost like family."
But you can attribute that.
So that's a very good example.
And that sounds very promising, and it can be attributed to simply physically getting people together so they can understand each other's religions and their heritage and culture?
Well, it's getting people together for some very structured conversations. When people get together without any kind of frame or help for the conversations, they will rehash the war, which is what we don't want because we all know those old stories. Mm-hmm. We want people to have new conversations on difficult topics. So we structure these conversations extremely carefully and build, starting with common denominator and then working toward differences in war history, so that it's not just being thrown together at all. It's a very deliberate way of bringing people together. And that's what peace building is.
When we're talking about the roots of conflict in strife-torn regions, how much of that is the heritage of borders created by other powers, just false borders?
Well, there's a great deal of trouble around that, especially in Africa, but certainly in Asia as well. In Africa, there were so many tribes and clans and religions, and the colonial borders were drawn up as lines in the sand, as they say, without regard for which people had which affiliations. And so much of the conflict now was a struggle to correct what was wrong with the French, the British, the Germans, the Dutch, etc., making up these divisions.
My understanding is there are a lot of countries that are just not governable in a democratic way because the borders are created in a way where there's no logic to the territory from an ethnic point of view. Consequently, you have a strong-arm leader or you've got chaos.
Yeah, the most interesting example of that in the current situation is Sudan and South Sudan, where I've been working for the past couple of years. And that was, until 2011, the largest land mass country in Africa. They had a divorce, not exactly a peaceable one, but they separated, and South Sudan became the newest nation state in the United Nations. The differences were that the North is Muslim and the South is Christian and animist. And the North had been oppressing people in the South over the centuries. And finally, in the last and this century, people rose up and felt they needed independence.
Was that a country created by European colonial powers?
Absolutely.
So there you have it. There you have a case of that. And I understand Syria's the same way. I mean, Assad represents 15% of the Syrian population with his tribe. And how can anybody rule Syria, which is not a logical country, but a country created 100 years ago by European powers?
That's right. And most of the countries in Africa were just so.
I'm Rick Steves. This is Travel with Rick Steves. We're talking building peace around the world with Paula Green. Her website is karunacenter.org, karunacenter.org. She's founded the Karuna Center for Peace Building. Paula, a lot of us are traveling. A lot of us are concerned about the challenges in this world. As a traveler, what advice can you give us to travel in a way that is peace building?
I would say sensitivity, respect, awareness, open-mindedness, knowing that we don't know what's best for others or for their struggles, and remembering that they're enduring what we might consider unendurable, and they're managing as best as they can, and remembering how privileged we are and what the obligations are of that privilege.
And what are the obligations of that privilege?
Well, for me, it's to give back.
And Paula, as you dedicate your work to building peace in these areas, what's one concrete example of what you've done that has been particularly gratifying?
Well, I want to talk about Bosnia because we started talking about Bosnia before. And over the 6 years, we worked with hundreds of people, Bosnian educators mostly from the various sides in the conflict. And then we picked the best people from each side and we began training of trainers programs. And we trained them to take over the work. Our goal is to make ourselves obsolete so that a couple of years after we've entered a country, we can walk away knowing that there are people carrying it on. And I stopped working in Bosnia in 2003, but I went back last year for a visit to the cities I worked in. And I was so gratified to see that people have started their own organizations. In fact, one person named their organization the Center for Peacebuilding, named after Karuna Center for Peacebuilding, and they're carrying on the work in very beautiful and meaningful ways.
That must be gratifying. And Paula Green, I wish for you to work yourself into complete obsolescence. And I think you've got a little work ahead of you before you get to there. But
yeah, it's not going to happen yet.
Best wishes with the Karuna Center for Peacebuilding.
Thank you so much, Rick.
Reshaping narrow law and art, whose symbols are the millions slain from bitter searching of the heart. We rise to play a greater part.
Travel with Rick Steves is produced at Europe Through the Back Door in Edmonds, Washington by Tim Tatton with Sarah McCormick and Isaac Kaplan-Wolner. Thanks to WFCR in Amherst, Massachusetts for studio help this week. You can listen again on demand and find guest information in the details for each week's show. You'll find it in the radio section of ricksteves.com. And we'll look for you again next week with more Travel with Rick Steves.
Travel with Rick Steves is made possible in part by the European Union delegation to the USA. The European Union received the 2012 Nobel Peace Prize for promoting peace, human rights, and democracy. Information available at euintheus.org.